Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, and welcome back to Third Stream View here at bbsradio.com. Station 2, every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. Now, today, here on BBS Radio, on Third Stream View, here on Monday, July 9th, this is a pre-recorded interview. And I'll be speaking with my friend Charles about the military, U.S. military, foreign policy, global politics. Charles is a 10-year Army veteran. He was in the U.S. Army for 10 years. So we're going to talk about a bunch of things, and I'm going to enlighten him to a few things. And I don't think he'll leave this show looking at things like he has previously. So we'll get to that in a minute. So meanwhile, Romney's on the campaign trail, the white Obama. And in the fall, millions of Republicans and conservatives, I'm sure, will hold their nose and vote for the architect of Obamacare. But not me, as Curly would say. I met on 4th of July at a picnic. I met Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson, who is my second choice after Ron Paul. I met him. I gave him a copy of Why Austrian Economics Matters, and I enjoyed listening to him, gave him a little bit of advice about the drug war, what to say when they like to bring that up, which specifically as well. Did you know that the drug war has racist origins? In fact, did you know that the marijuana laws were initially aimed at Hispanics, blacks, and later musicians? So do you support a racist drug war? Put them on the defensive. He liked that. So hopefully he'll use it. But he was a very good governor. He was elected two terms in a Democrat state. He was the governor of Arizona and quite the veto governor. He vetoed a lot of legislation, which makes me happy. And he had a great line at the debates when he was in the presidential debates, when he said concerning shovel-ready jobs, he said, my neighbor's two dogs have created more shovel-ready jobs than this Obama administration, which I thought was a hilarious but excellent line at the same time. So I'm not totally thrilled with his foreign policy. He's a little bit too generous or not as non-interventionist as I would like, but he's certainly the next best thing to Ron Paul. And he has a track record to prove it. So, and he's not excited about attacking Iran. I mean, you know, Romney's a lawyer, as is Obama. And Romney, all right, I'll be there in a moment. And Romney is a lawyer, and yet he, you know, even in the debates in the 08, 07, he said he'd have to check with lawyers to decide what was constitutional about, I think, going to war or whatnot. So he doesn't even have a clear view, but yet the guy's a lawyer. So anyway, with that, the mighty PK here is going to welcome my friend Charles to Third Stream View. Charles, are you out there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, PK?
Good. Welcome to Third Stream View.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Thank you. Would you care for some tea or coffee?
Oh, yeah, actually, I'll take my tea with two sugars, please.
Well, good, because it's self-service here.
Oh, well, so, thank you very much.
Yes, anyway, on this show here, I'm the mighty host, and I am humble and learned in philosophy, economics, history, foreign policy. In fact, Charles, I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history.
You're a rare breed.
Thank you. I'm an American who actually knows that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world and even itself.
I agree with that.
Well, thank you. You should. Now, you've traveled partially because you've been in the military, so you've been overseas.
Yes.
Now, let me give you the standard thing that I do for our vets, and that, of course, is thank you for your service, your bravery. That's all appreciated. I understand that. We get that. But we're going to steer also in a different direction, and that's going to involve foreign policy. And since you're a 10-year Army vet, I'm going to enjoy your take on things, and I'm going to hip you to a few things that you may not be aware of, and I'm hoping that once you leave this little chat today, that you're going to look at global events probably in a different light than you do right now.
Okay. Well, enlighten me.
Well, okay, so you served part of your duration of service. You were in Europe?
Yes, I was.
So you lived in Germany for a while?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And you were airborne? Were you a paratrooper?
Yes.
Okay. And also today we're going to talk about the veteran affairs because it's all sort of tied in. Now, so you were – how long were you in Europe?
3 years.
3 years. Did you enjoy being out of the country or, you know, having a different perspective?
Oh, I loved it. I love meeting the new cultures, learning the language, you know, getting involved in everything. I enjoyed it out there.
Ich spreche sehr kleine Deutsch.
Yeah, I did a whole lot more years ago, but now since I'm not invited to speak to that language, it's fading away, but I used to hold my own.
Oh, great. Did you, were you able to visit any other European countries?
Not too many. They kept me pretty busy over there. When we traveled, it was usually on a military mission.
Uh-huh.
And times off, you know, was spent with our family, you know, trying to get ready for the next, you know, deployment.
Right. Now, were you in Desert Storm?
No. No, I'm an older soldier.
Oh, okay.
I got out just before it started.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to avoid that conflict. And by the way, Charles, did you know that Kuwait was slant oil drilling into Iraqi territory?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
You knew that?
Yes, I did, many years ago.
Well, that's good. That's good. So what I'm getting at is that, first of all, if I was a president, I would not lie to our troops and get them put in harm's way based on lies and BS. And that is very separate than somebody's patriotism and loyalty and, you know, serving. I think it's a separate issue. It's a fundamental issue because the troops, if we truly care about our troops, we wouldn't lie to them in the first place.
This is true. This is true. But we knew this oil thing was going to happen out there many, many years in advance. And I remember still being a young trainee, and they were telling us that our next war is going to be in the desert. And we spent, you know, 6 months out of the year in the desert learning how to navigate and getting used to the heat because we knew we were going, you know, years later.
Right. Did you also know that pretty much for Desert Storm, all this debilitating Gulf War syndrome, probably the real culprit for that is the cocktail of vaccines that they gave our troops?
Yes, I do. I realized that a long time ago. They inoculated us in case we went here, in case we went there. And when I finally had gotten out and got a hold of a civilian physician and showed him my shot record, he was thoroughly surprised. He said, "Where the hell have you been and what did they do?"
Wow. That's scary because
shots. Yeah.
That's scary because vaccines have a long-term effect.
Yeah.
And now, I never confuse – I'm going to say some controversial things here, but I reject – I'm not saying you're going to say any of this because I don't think you're going to react this way. But I never confuse my patriotism with loyalty to the government. It's like those bumper stickers that say, "I love my country, but I fear my government."
Yes.
My patriotism, which I think generally speaking everybody should be – is directed towards the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution. That's where my patriotism lies, not with some temporary occupant of Congress or the White House.
I agree.
Because principles should remain long after we're gone.
I agree.
So,
there's a lot of self-serving people in office now, and they're guiding the military hand to fulfill their own pockets and needs of their friends, with any regard for the people that are actually doing the fighting on the ground.
Boy, did you say that right. But furthermore, we have a massive military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about, and you got these top bananas in military positions and generals smoothly going in and out of the military to these highly paid jobs in the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
That would be... Yeah. All the manufacturers of weapons and bombs and all that. Now, I know we need a military. That's in the Constitution. I'm not I'm not disputing that at all. But to have such a massive military and bases, military bases in over 130 countries, over 900 military bases in 130 foreign countries, this to me is far beyond what the Constitution calls for.
I agree. There's a lot of occupation, and I'm not sure why they're doing it like they are. You know, we're not privileged to such information or what their long-term plans are, but I think we're overextended.
Yeah, you're sure right about that. And who suffers? The troops that we supposedly love. Well, let me tell you, if you don't know already, the number of military suicides of active duty and some returning vets is at an all-time high. Military spousal abuse is at an all-time high. Military divorces are at an all-time high.
I know. I've been watching them all. I know.
So this pro-war crowd, you know, and those who want, now, foolishly, they want war with Iran. What they're indirectly saying is they don't care if there's going to be more military suicides, military spousal abuse, and military divorces. It's just... It's tilted so far to ridiculous, being ridiculous, and way beyond what the Constitution calls for.
Well, we as soldiers are all disposable. You know, we go in with the notion that we're going to do right for our country, you know, and, you know, make men of ourselves and take care of our families. But we are just, you know, pawns and tools, to the point where if we damage ourselves, even to go out to the beach and get a sunburn, where we can't function properly the next day, we could be court-martialed for destruction of government property. Meaning,
wow.
Us.
Yeah, and you guys defend our rights, which include our First Amendment rights, but you don't even have First Amendment rights when you're in the military. People have to resign, or once they get out, then they talk, then they write their books.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the federal government spends more. The military budget is larger than most of the other countries combined. So the military budget in the U.S. is sucking away valuable investment capital from other private sector needs. Because building bombs and weapons and tanks, what is that? Eventually, you're going to need. They want to form wars to use this stuff. So I used to think that our troops are defending our rights. I don't think like that much anymore. I think that they are defending a globalist empire for the oligarchy in Washington, D.C.
And I'm inclined to agree. Right now, I think we're just protecting somebody's money because we're not doing what it was initiated for. We're not doing what's right.
Exactly. And I also... happen to be. I'm not a birther, but I am a truther. I do not believe that those two planes alone took down the buildings. And when you research it and you see and hear the other bombs going off downstairs before the buildings even crashed and all this sort of thing. So the way I see it as 9/11 was the way to get their foot in the door to massively expand the military industrial complex and to expand the global empire. Meanwhile, our troops are poorly paid pawns in the game, and they do all the work and the suffering and the dying and the fighting and getting wounded.
And I agree with all that as well. Like I said, we're just tools to be used and thrown away. And the whole 9/11 thing, I believe, was just a ploy to get what they wanted, you know, as far as the oil goes and to go to war. And no, you just can't take a plane down like that. No.
Yeah, well, I know. And, you know, normally... the military, you know, if in the States, normally with the Air Force, if a plane goes off course unexplained, they scramble immediately.
Yes.
So
yes.
Let me throw a few details out there for you. You may or may not know already, but it all has to do with where all this is going. You know, the morning of 9/11, Dick Cheney, whom I despise, was conducting military drills. They had a NORAD stand down. So the air traffic controllers didn't know, well, is this business as usual? Are these military drills, or is this a hijacking?
Yes, I heard that as well.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand when it was happening. I couldn't understand why, you know, there weren't planes in the air going to pick them up. Why were we grounded?
Right, right. and, you know, no one's been fired or really come down hard on. Now, there's, you know, the Pentagon, just like the Murray Building in Oklahoma, had numerous cameras. The Pentagon has something like 90 cameras. You know, it's one of the most highly defended institutions in the country, and they couldn't even defend their own headquarters. And, you know, there's hardly any remnants of wreckage. They've only released one camera shot. It looked like a little silver streak hitting the side of the building, but they haven't released any of that. And the politicians' excuses for decades now for whatever they want to cover up is national security.
Yeah, it's always under that umbrella.
Exactly.
You know, there's always so much information that's blocked out due to national security. You know, they won't tell you that most of those offices that were in the Twin Towers are government offices, but they were 90% empty. Right? Why?
Well,
it's business hours. Everybody should have been there.
You know, so then you know about World Trade Center Building Number 7.
Yes.
Most people don't know that three buildings went down that day, and Number 7, which is 47 stories high, was imploded at 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11. It had some fire damage. It was not hit by a plane.
No, it was structurally sound. It shouldn't have gone
right
down.
Structurally steel buildings have never collapsed from fire damage.
Yeah,
I know. So
they've done some terrible things, and they've been covering it up and blocking it out, and they're waiting for everybody to ignore it or forget about it.
That's right. So now we're going to back up a little bit because all this is tying in. See, I believe in you've heard that, you know what the NWO is, the New World Order?
Yes.
You've heard that term, Illuminati.
Yes,
well,
I
believe that is the oligarchy that is in control in the West. I believe it's the Rockefeller, Rothschild, International Zionist, Globalist, Global Zionism, International Jewry Consortium that controls everything, including the banking. The banking industry.
Yes.
So, talk about false flags and whatnot. Let's back up. Let's go. And I'm not a Kennedy assassination buff, but I just learned something 2 weeks ago about 2 months ago that's very angered me quite a bit. Is that, you know, the Zapruder film of the assassination?
Okay.
You've seen that. Everybody's seen it.
Oh, yeah, everyone has.
Okay. That, I think they whacked Kennedy on a Thursday. Well, over that weekend, the CIA got a hold of that film, and they edited out maybe 30, 35 frames of that film. Then,
that's no security.
That's what, yeah, well, but yeah, we didn't even know that. We know it. That's come out, you know, since. We didn't even know that then, because the CIA are the masters of deception. But it gets better or even worse, and I did not know this, Charles. They also, shortly after that, they removed the windshield in the limousine because it had a bullet hole coming from the front.
Okay, that I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. Okay, so they always need their patsy. Now, Oswald may or may not have been involved in it, but he was definitely the patsy, someone that they can blame, point the finger at. So this person might think they're involved, and then, you know, at the last minute, the tables get turned on them, and then they're the patsy. And then,
yeah,
you know, a couple days later, he gets shot on his way to a hearing.
Yeah, and when the gun in his hand, and nobody knows what happened. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, and then LBJ gets elected, and he basically countermands everything Kennedy did. He was going to, you know, he was going to bring the troops out of Vietnam, the advisors, he's going to wind that down. So Johnson did just about the opposite. So I believe that it was the CIA mainly involved in the Kennedy assassination. Now let's move up to Dr. Martin Luther King. We had the infamous James Earl Ray.
Uh-huh.
Now he may or may not been involved, but from what I've read, I think it was last year what I read, that the fingers really point to the FBI.
Yes.
So
all those documents were supposed to be declassified years ago for both Kennedy and Dr. King. And they keep pushing the dates back. They want to make sure that everybody who might have seen, heard a speech or knew of him personally, they want to make sure that everyone who could possibly be connected is already long dead and gone to where it is just history. And they can't come back and bite them in the butt. So they keep pushing the dates back, you know, 50 years at a time to make sure everyone is deceased to really give a damn.
Well, you know, Charles, that was brilliantly stated. That was brilliantly stated, and a lot of people don't even know that or realize that.
Yeah, they don't want us to know. They want us to how dirty.
Yeah, but the general public, the general public doesn't know. They have their you know, suspicions, but in general, they, you know, they don't know. Okay, so let's look at Bobby Kennedy. Who was his patsy? Sirhan Sirhan.
Sirhan.
And it's come out lately that there were a lot more bullets found than what his gun carried. So they think the CIA was involved in that too.
Yeah.
One reason they got down on Dr. King was he, as much as he you know, approved of LBJ's civil rights acts, he was totally against the war. He saw it as a giant contradiction. What about the civil rights of the Vietnamese? So that was a thorn in LBJ's side, and I'm sure the FBI and the pro-war crowd was happy to be rid of Dr. King for those reasons. Even though it, you know, it could make a martyr out of someone, they don't, you know, they don't like that, and they don't like what I have to say. I mean, I'm sure they're listening in. There's those pricks from the CIA, FBI, NSA. You know, they're monitoring all this stuff. They don't like it. This country, to me, is turning into a massive police state, and now they've got these drones. I'm really down on this whole drone stuff. I knew that those drones would be used within our country, and it's coming into fruition, and they've got very small ones now that could hover outside your door, maybe go down your chimney. I mean, it's scary what lies ahead, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They even portrayed that in a TV show a month or so ago.
Really?
Yeah. They had it hovering over somebody's backyard, spying on them.
Wow.
Visit them to be a child molester or something.
And then
the television show, so it's used more than we realize.
Oh, and every police department wants them. The police departments are getting more militarized. The Pentagon gives them all this stuff, and this stupid drug war continues to go on. It's a $1 trillion failure, and the drug war, a lot of people don't know this either.
I mean,
it has racist roots. Especially the marijuana laws were initially directed against Hispanics, Blacks, and then musicians. You know, marijuana was legal till 1937. Then all of a sudden, it's illegal, and people are criminals. So they criminalized it, and they tried to protect DuPont and the synthetic industries who didn't want competition from cheap industrial hemp.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many conspiracies. Actually, not even conspiracies. Partnerships that they try to pass off to us as you know, ill practices. The drug war is not a war; it's a partnership. You know, there's no way all these drugs are coming in without the right connections from the higher up businessmen who have their shipping lanes open, you know, their border lines open, their transportation lines open, so these people can bring the product in to distribute through the inner cities to create havoc, so they can force another policy to change this, change that.
Do you know who one of the biggest conduits is for this illegal drug trade?
What?
Our friends in the CIA, also known as Cocaine Importation Agency. Did you know? I've seen it. I've seen the footage on YouTube that even now British and American troops are guarding the poppy fields in Afghanistan. Opium production's at an all-time high, and where does most of it come from? Now, the CIA uses a lot of this money for their psyops and their black ops operations that they can't get funding from Congress for. And it's all wrapped up in patriotism, and we're supposed to believe this crap. So you have the CIA, you have Britain's MI6, and Israel's Mossad. They work together, and they are the masters of deception.
I agree.
The CIA is heavily involved in the major news networks, in the newspapers, in our universities. Its tentacles go much further than I ever realized.
You know, when I was a young soldier, I wanted to go that route. I thought I was going to be, you know, the supreme patriot. You know, but I saw how dirty these guys really are. It's just a nasty business, and I didn't want any part of it.
Well, thank goodness that you took that stance, because you know, and of course, you know, it's all wrapped up in patriotism and, you know, waving the flag. But when you go beyond that, there's a lot of underhanded stuff going on, and it's not constitutional. And it's why it the CIA is doing a lot of these drone attacks in Pakistan and these other countries now. So that way, it clears the president from it and the military. It's the CIA doing it. You know, there's no
liability.
Right. Because, you know, even ever since, say, World War II, there has not been a formal declaration of war. Only Congress can declare war. They say, well, the president had congressional approval. It's not the same thing. Therefore, Iraq was much better under Saddam. He wasn't a nice guy, but he fought against terrorism for over 30 years. Iraq had the largest number of college-educated Arabs. It had a small Christian community. It had a small Jewish community. Alcohol was tolerated. Women did not have to dress a certain way. And Saddam kept a lid on religious sectarian violence.
At one point, we were supposed to remove him, you know, when I was active. We actually had, you know, the maps and everything. We were on the runway. The plane was already going down the runway. We were going to go take him out. And 10 minutes in the flight, the light changed back to green. We got a call saying the mission's off. He's now an ally.
Have you seen the footage? December 1983 of Donald Rumsfeld meeting and shaking Saddam's hand. Okay, well, that was part of that was to go and reestablish our good relations with Iraq in his war against Iran. So, and then they say, well, he killed his own Saddam gas and killed a lot of his own people. Yes, with weapons he acquired from the U.S., NATO, and Russia with American supplied helicopters.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, that's where they get a lot of this stuff. And so, okay, so the U.S. was helping Saddam against Iran. Okay, so in 86, we have the Iran-Contra scandal. Saddam becomes furious because he finds out that the U.S., you know, and Israel, they're propping up, they're supplying Iran, his enemy, with weapons also.
You never stay friends for long.
That's for sure.
You kind of kiss butt this week to stay alive for next week. You know, and if they think you're kissing somebody else's butt even harder, you know, and we can't use that person, we'll take you out and go directly to the source.
Well, that's true. That's what they do. But they had no authority to do that in the first place. You know, so Saddam might not have been a nice guy, but he kept a lid on that religious sectarian violence, and he held back the forces of fundamentalism. You know, for 30 years. So they destroyed a secular Muslim country. So now they're trying to push us into war with Iran on behalf of Israel. And I am very critical of Israel and Zionism. Israel is not our 51st state. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it say the American taxpayers have to continuously fund Israel with continuous foreign aid and an endless supply of free American-made murder weapons, because America had no enemies in the Middle East before 1948 when Israel was violently imposed on Palestine. And ever since then, USA to Israel has made such a mess, and Israel's boot is on America's neck. A lot of people don't realize this, but I'm not afraid to criticize that crowd. And of course, when you criticize Israel or Zionism, you're immediately labeled as anti-Semitic. Well, yeah. I got news for that crowd. I stand with the anti-Zionist Jews, especially Jews united against Zionism. Now, Jews who speak out against Israel and Zionism, they're automatically labeled self-hating Jews or anti-Semitic, which I think is, you know, hypocritical and hilarious. But a lot of people don't realize the power that Israel has in this country. I mean, Romney's going to make a trip over there soon. Marco Rubio goes over there shortly after he's elected. I mean, that Israeli lobby is very powerful, and they manipulate the U.S.
How much more than people realize.
Pardon?
How much of the U.S. do they actually own?
Well, a lot of people say they own the Congress. You know, if you're not pro-Israel, then you know you don't have much of a chance. And I think that's ridiculous. I am a pro-America. I'm an America firster. And our troops and our military is not meant to be fighting proxy wars for Israel. And as I understand it, even during the lead up to the Iraq war, big oil was not banging the drums for war. It's this American empire. We're not supposed to have an empire. We broke away from the British Empire. So now we have this massive military, again, with over 900 bases in over 130 foreign countries. Like Ron Paul says, how would we like it if there were Russian or Chinese bases in America or in Canada or in Mexico?
Yeah.
And we can't afford it. It's like $1 trillion. Look at the economy. Look at all these people out of work. We're spending $40 billion a year to prop up Japan, our rich ally, and Western Europe. Why are we propping up our rich allies? They should be spending their own money on defense. We need that money here at home to build up our infrastructure and to shore up the things that, you know, the things that we need. I didn't think I'd see it this bad in my lifetime, but the new world order, in my view, is really galloping along pretty quickly.
All right, so what exactly, I mean, why aren't we taking care of our own stuff here at home? I mean, we're busy propping up, you know, 90% of the world, but we're ignoring all the problems that we have here with our own people, our own infrastructure, our own everything. What are we actually trying to do?
We're trying to
make friends.
Well, we're trying to maintain a global empire, to me, which is all unconstitutional, you know, and I've been out of the country a lot, and I've had interesting conversations with many people from other parts of the world. And like I started the show with you, I love doing this because as soon as I tell somebody that speaks English from outside of the country that I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history, it's like a curtain comes down and there's no hindrance to conversation because they know I'm one of those rare Americans who actually gets it.
Yeah.
Because we're so, you know, we're sold on this BS about American exceptionalism. I have a real problem with that term because I don't believe that America has a monopoly on hard work, on innovation, on technology. Does America have the most oil? Do we make the best cars? Do we make the best electronics? Do we have the highest math scores? I mean, that's all living on our laurels.
No, we probably have the biggest ego, but no, we're behind on everything else.
That's brilliant. Write that one in stone, man. That's a great one. All right. Now I'm going to move ahead to our veterans when they come back home and how they're treated, especially those who need medical care. I may have told you this in the past. This friend of mine from grade school and high school, his brother-in-law was debilitated from Agent Orange in Vietnam, and he had to go to trials and lawsuits. He had to travel across the state to get medical care. What they put this guy through, I mean – you know, I learned this heard this story about 20 years ago. I couldn't believe it. I said, "That's how they treat our vets."
Yeah, I can talk about this firsthand.
I know you have some issues with your knees.
Yes. Yeah.
Please
tell
us.
I've been waiting for knee replacements for many years, but they didn't want to do it until I was, you know, deeper into age. You know, according to them, I would wear them out too quickly, and they have to have them replaced. Even though I was going through debilitating pain and laying up for weeks, not being able to move, and they kept me doped up with 400 milligrams of OxyContin for almost 15 years to deal with the pain, but they still wouldn't replace my knees. Now, they'll take care of your injuries, your very visible ones, like loss of limbs, you know, eyes, things like that. They'll take care of those immediately because they're pretty much visible. You know, but things that are internal or blood diseases or nerve or mental disorders, that kind of stuff, they kind of brush under the rug, and they'll make you jump through hoop after hoop to try and get to see a doctor, to get certified, to get care, to get pay for the damage they've caused so you can move on and take care of your family. They will make you wait for years. And if you give up the fight because you're tired of all the red tape and constantly being told no, they'll pretty much wait for you to die with the injury so they can say, see, it never existed in the first place.
Wow. Wow. That's a shame. But you know, they've got plenty of money. to station more troops here and there or build more weapons, but not to pay our troops, a lot more, what they're worth, and also especially to take care of their medical needs.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you that when you enlist. Oh, by the way, good luck afterwards.
Yeah. No, that's not on the books at all. You know, they create a lot of the problems that we're having. You know, it's all a test. It's all a game. They will see just how much we can stand, how much they can get away with. You know, and they monitor you throughout the years, you know, to see, okay, is this going to happen to him? You know, is he going to glow in the dark? Is he going to fall apart? What's going to happen? And they write it down and they change their progress reports and try another subject.
Wow. And meanwhile, it's the big shots in the military industrial complex, the manufacturers of weaponry, the generals and the politicians. They all retire very wealthy with 6-7 figure salaries, massive pensions, while you poor grunts bear the brunt of everything, and they wave the flag and tell you how much they appreciate your service.
Oh yeah.
There is a famous book that I wish every recruit had to read before he entered. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I only heard of it a few years ago. It was written by former highly decorated Marine Major General Smedley Butler, and it's called War is a Racket.
Huh.
It's a little booklet. He died in 1940. He was in World War I, but he notes in it all, that he was basically a bag man for U.S. corporations and whatnot, only under the guise of, the U.S. military in Haiti and Central America, probably Dominican Republic. He says, when I look back, he said, I was doing all this for United Fruit Company and all these other kind of things. But I make the distinction. I am not pro-business per se. I am very pro-free enterprise, and I'm very pro-true free market capitalism, which means no bailouts, no tax-funded bailouts, no corporate welfare, no subsidies, no corporate socialism. I mean, I would have let the auto companies go under and be quickly reorganized, but I would give them I wish the corporate tax in this country was like 2%, so they could thrive and compete without any protection or privilege,
That's how it should be.
They're just propping things up and making it worse. And, I didn't think this economy would ever see it like this, but I think it's scary. Now politically and geopolitically, go ahead.
It's scary because there's no cap on the greed. I mean, there's no limit to what they can do or how much they can take. And that's what the problem is. Even when they get money for bailouts, to try and help the regular worker take care of things, instead of sifting that money down to the people who need it, who are actually doing the work, they're buying bigger planes, going on more expensive vacations, wasteful.
True, but that money is not being reinvested in the companies. That money shouldn't come from the taxpayers in the first place, because why should poor and middle-class people just trying to make it be taxed for these fat rich cats? That is not free enterprise. That is, I would call it corporate socialism or statism or mercantilism. It's political privilege for the politically connected. When the concept should really be liberty for all and special privileges for none.
Well, we don't have that now, do we?
No. That's another reason I won't say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, because in no way do I have liberty and justice for all. I believe in secession, and the pledge was written by a white supremacist Christian missionary. And the salute to the flag used to be a stiff arm salute up until the mid-30s or so, when they realized, that's what the fascists in Europe were using, was a stiff arm salute. So they took that stiff arm and put hand over heart. You can see a picture of the stiff arm salute in Wikipedia. If you see the salute to the flag, the students used to have a stiff arm salute to the flag.
Yeah, that's how we were taught in school.
Exactly. Yeah, so I don't buy into that nonsense anymore. Let's back up again. You talk about false flags and leading the people on. World War II, Pearl Harbor, they had already, the military had already broken the Japanese code. And Roosevelt maneuvered Japan into attacking the U.S. because he cut off their oil by embargo. He embargoed their raw materials. I mean, those are acts of war, and he did that without any congressional approval. So Pearl Harbor hits.
He needed a reason to test the bomb.
To test the bomb?
Yeah, they needed a reason.
Well, later on that happened, yeah. Yeah, in 45 or so, and that was like to scare the Russians. But, so, they fabricate this, you know, they instigate Japan to attacking, and then they launch, you know, they get the war going because Roosevelt wanted to get into the war in Europe also. But, you know, he kept saying he was going to keep us out of war, but behind the scenes, they're doing everything they can to get us into war. Now back up to the Spanish-American War, the battleship Maine that supposedly blew up in the harbor Havana. That turned out to be probably a fire or some accident on the ship itself that caused that problem. But that launched the whole country into war. And a lot of people don't know this. When the U.S. occupied the Philippines about 1900, the military over there, U.S., they caused the death of up to like 200,000 Filipinos.
Wow. That I didn't know.
Yeah, it was awful. And, you know, Teddy Roosevelt thought, you know, that was a great thing. This is American nationalism and American imperialism. You know, France and England's doing it. Let's, you know, we ought to have our own. And that's contrary to the ideals, you know, of this country. So, that's the kind of stuff that's been going on. So now you don't know who you're fighting for. I watch the news with a big grain of salt because I just don't believe any of this crap that's going on. Now, leading up to 9/11, there was something called the PNAC document, Project for New American Century. And a lot of these neoconservatives signed, including Cheney and this crowd. They wanted Clinton to attack Iraq, but to his credit, he wouldn't do it. And in that, they said they wanted to rebuild America's defenses, as if we didn't have enough already in all these other countries. And they said, quote, it would take something like a new Pearl Harbor to galvanize American public opinion. And 3 years later, they got their 9/11.
They push to get what they want, and they're going to stop at no means. They don't care how many Americans they hurt to do it. You know, that's
exactly
sacrifice for the greater good.
Exactly. So these are globalist puppets, and Obama is one of them. He's a very willing player. He was groomed by Brzezinski. So the globalists, they don't really care who wins. They have the illusion that they want us to think there's a difference between the two parties when they basically agree on everything except how much to spend. And the foreign policy remains the same. So this is what we're faced with. And it's the wars are bankrupting the country just as much as the entitlements are.
Yeah, definitely. The banks are being run by the government. They're controlling their funds.
Well, the banks are the Federal Reserve. People blame the banks, and they deserve some of the criticism, but the architects, the source is the Federal Reserve, the central bank all the banks are tied into. And Ron Paul has gone off after the Federal Reserve big time, the international bankers, I'm not afraid to say it here, it's the Zionist Jewish crowd who controls the Federal Reserve. They're the same crowd that set up the Federal Reserve in 1913, and they made it sound like it's going to be the lender of last resort and help out the banks. But what it did is it took control, and it caused the Great Depression. And what it's done lately, causing the mess we're in, is by lowering the interest rates. People who think the illusion, oh, money's cheap. The lower interest rates caused this mess in the first place because businesses expand. People think that money's cheap. But the people who get the new money first, whether it's welfare recipients, defense contractors, construction, they get the money before prices rise. So there's we call it a credit expansion that's happened, and this has caused this mess. If we'd had higher interest rates all along, we wouldn't have had this mess, and the economy would be more sound. I know I'm getting into economics here, but it's like all tied in together. But I can tell you this, that this country's welfare, warfare state keeps marching forward, and it keeps bankrupting us. And I fear on the horizon, I fear civil war between the haves and the have-nots. And I don't mean just, I just don't mean poor people. I mean regular middle class or lower middle class people who don't have jobs, who are hardworking, who want the jobs, who can't find them. And I also fear food riots. Do you know how long it would take if we had food riots to empty the stores? What, 3 hours? Bang.
Yeah. But it's already on the edge of that now. We have people, you know, robbing banks in minivans now. They're to the point where they're so stressed out and no work, no money, to where they don't even care anymore. It seems the prison might be the best option. At least they get clothed and fed. Everybody is on edge. There's no jobs. There's no finances going around. Everybody's, it's already happening.
It's
already at war.
Pretty sad we even have to have this conversation.
Yeah.
I didn't think
The war's already started.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd see it in our lifetime. Now, they've got a lot of these FEMA camps that they say don't exist. They say these FEMA camps are to put so-called illegal aliens in. But I think that if there's a showdown between the federal government and the people, that that's where they're going to stick us protesters and us so-called insurgents. And that's why I would urge men like you to join the Oath Keepers if you don't have it, or if you know about them, is that these are former military or active military and or policemen who will refuse to follow any unconstitutional orders, and they will not fire on the American people at home.
Oh, no. There's never a reason to do that.
Did you see that fairly big black Marine during the Occupy Wall Street, or was he in California, talk the police? He backed the police down. He was in his fatigues. I don't know if you saw this. It's very heartwarming. I saw it on YouTube, and he backed down about 10 cops. And he, what are you hurt? These are American people. And they saw that he was a vet. Well, see, a lot of cops are vets too. So they didn't harass him. They didn't go after him. He's shouting him. He shouted him down. It's very impressive to see.
No,
he actually made
them
sort of come to their senses.
Wow. And when was this?
I don't know if it was in the last year. It was at the peak of some of these protests. You know, the 1%. You know, the Occupy Wall Street crowd. This and that.
Okay.
But it was impressive to see this guy. I mean, I've talked to a fellow from Veterans for Peace, and you know, we all love our country. We just don't like what the government's doing, and it's, you know, again, it's bankrupting us. I wanted to touch on something else about vaccines. You know, the military's, you may have heard about this, the military's main biological warfare research center is Fort Detrick in Maryland.
Yes.
Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I contend, I've been a disciple of Dr. Richard Strecker, or is it Robert Strecker now, since about 1990. And he contends that the AIDS virus is a man-made virus, probably fabricated at Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Okay.
And it was spread. Pardon?
Go ahead.
It was spread. I'm going to give you this in a nutshell. It was spread through Africa in the mid to late 70s through the smallpox vaccine. And then you had Haitians who worked in Africa. They too were vaccinated. Brazil bought blood from their blood banks from Africa. Okay, in a nutshell, AIDS, I call AIDS a man-made disease. I've renamed AIDS to AIDS is designed specifically. The cover of the London Tribune, the London Times, excuse me, Monday, May 11th, 1987, says smallpox vaccine triggers AIDS virus. And there's a story in it, and it shows how many, you know, millions of Africans were vaccinated in different countries. So long story short, the AIDS vaccine, the AIDS virus, is a combination. It's an inborn blood virus. It's a combination. You know, animals get leukemias. It's a combination of bovine visna leukemia that cattle get and bovine visna that sheep get. And these were combined. These are recombined viruses that do not exist naturally in nature.
Okay. Let me tell you what I know about all this. Back in the early 80s, they brought all the NCOs in Europe to this one little theater, and they gave us this video and a report. And we're all watching this movie, and it shows this big strapping, you know, Sergeant First Class. He's about 225 pounds, giving this speech about this new disease. And he's talking about how it ravages the body. He's going through all the processes, and this is long before, you know, HIV or AIDS was even announced in the States. And we're being told this in Europe. And we're going to listen to all this stuff he's having to say. At the end of this hour-long program, it shows this guy in the hospital bed weighing just under 100 pounds, dying of this disease. And it was the same guy who started the video. So as many years as we know it takes to, you know, to ravage the body and take you from being, you know, 200-plus pounds to damn near death, we're talking about years. And here in the early 80s, it started with this guy giving this lecture, and at the end of it, he was in bed dying from the same disease that he was started talking about.
Wow.
This is before it even got announced over here in Europe.
Well, interesting. Now, how did the American gays get – how did it affect them so much? Because as Strecker says, there's been gays throughout history, but they've generally been healthy. Well, in 1978, 1980 – there was a study by the New York City Blood Bank called the Trojan Horse Study. And in it, they vaccinated several thousand predominantly white homosexuals between the ages of 20 and 40 for hepatitis B. And that's how it spread through the gay community. So in the future, I mean, they don't necessarily have to send in weapons and armies to kill people. They can do it by vaccines.
Oh yeah,
and there's some that say that these globalists, they want to reduce the world population to maybe just about a billion people or so. So I believe that biological warfare is a step in that direction, and AIDS,
definitely.
You know, AIDS is so all this shit's working against us at the mean, and in the same time here at home, the medical industrial complex persecutes alternative medicine, alternative doctors. Just about every sixth commercial or so on TV is a pharmaceutical commercial.
Yeah.
And then you hear at the end how they rifle quickly through the side effects.
Yeah, yeah. See, all this nonsense is why I was so terrified with the H1N1 nonsense. They're telling you to go get the vaccine. No. Hell no. I'm not
good
going
for you.
To get it.
I would never – I wouldn't get a flu shot. And they give them away like
no.
candy. My chiropractor laughs. You know, most of natural holistic medicine practitioners are opposed to all this stuff. I would never get a flu shot.
No. In all my years of service, I've seen what all these things can do and how they, you know, they lie to the masses. You know, to me, it's all a way of gathering information or disbursement of some new, you know, thing they're trying to do. So,
exactly.
No, I'm staying away from all of it.
Exactly. And just like, you know, shortly after 9/11, those envelopes with the anthrax in them. Well, that was military grade anthrax. That was not stuff that Muslim terrorists had access to.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm supposed to believe that Osama bin Laden pulled off 9/11 from a laptop in a cave. I believe he had next to nothing to do with 9/11, but he was the scapegoat. He was the patsy. I'm not even killed him last year.
He's the Oswald. Yeah.
Yes, true. So that's why I don't like these false flags, you know, and those who want to shut us down, even regular people who say, whenever they level the word, oh, conspiracy theory, you know, I'm not interested in conspiracy theories. I'm interested in the facts of conspiracies.
Yeah.
So labeling or just saying, oh, that's conspiracy theory, that's a subtle attempt to censor all rational inquiry, dissent, and debate. They want us just to shut up and be little serfs and you know, go along with what they want.
Yes, yes. Don't
Thank
make
goodness
any
for the –
Just bend over and take it. Don't make any waves.
Right. Thank goodness for the internet because – and they want to regulate that, too, and be able to shut it down. But the internet, you know, of course, there's a lot of BS on there, too. But, I mean, thanks to the internet and alternative media, I mean, we have this show right now where you and I could just lay it out there. you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't pull any punches about what's going on. And, they wouldn't want me on mainstream. I was – talk radio doesn't want me. Fox News doesn't want me. CNN wouldn't want me. But thank goodness for alternative radio, because people can speak their minds. They can type. Yeah. They can put out there what they want. I don't know if you got to read it. I think I sent you my overview of World War II in Europe.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Thank you.
Did you happen to read it?
Yes, I did. I read all of it.
What'd you think?
It was deep. It was deep. And I was like, wow.
That's what I thought, Charles. Didn't come to me, overnight. This has been a few years of study. And I'm, so that's what happened. So you get rid of Hitler, and then you got this massive communist, global communist attempts, which you served during the Cold War, during that era.
Yeah.
So you get rid of Saddam, and that opens up the gates for more fundamentalism. Meanwhile, us little people, we're the ones, and our families and friends, they're the ones who are suffering. They're the ones who are doing the dying.
Yeah.
And the irony of it now is our first, I say mixed race president, because Obama has a white mama. So, yes, you could say black president. But anyway, his wars are continuing to kill darker skinned people on the other side of the world. And this just creates more antagonism. All these drone attacks and, interfering in Syria and Yemen. I mean, those countries are not democracies. They'll probably never have a democracy. It's like, if somebody's been smoking cigarettes for 80 years, you ain't going to get them to stop. That's what they do.
Yeah, this is like,
like it or not, that's how they live. And, Afghanistan, which has been called the graveyard of empires. Well, look what happened. Alexander the Great had a problem there. The British took it on the chin twice there. Russia got their butt kicked there, and now it's happening to the U.S. with all their high-tech stuff, because these people are not afraid of Uncle Sam. It's their turf. They know that turf, and they'll wait it out, and they'll hit and run. They'll do whatever they have to do to, get their freedom and drive out the infidel invaders. I mean, but see, I understand that, because I understand world history.
You do.
So what you know now, at your young age, when you look back, then you can see, wow, because if you, and like a lot of the recruits are young folks, they're young fellas. They're not, their brains aren't all that developed. They don't know so much about history and things in life. So they get it when they're young, and they can manipulate them more and get them in there and, saluting that flag and everything, which, I understand the patriotic part, but, they couldn't do that to guys your age now because you're too informed.
Exactly. See, they're catching them now when they come in because they got the girlfriend pregnant and they need to take care of the baby, or they're trying to get money for college so they can go toss burgers at McDonald's because they can't get a job anywhere else. They're not looking at world history or military history and trying to see where, what are they going to do to them? Where am I going to be, 5 years down the line while I'm in uniform? What are they going to have me do? They're not thinking ahead.
Exactly. Thinking right exactly. Now. And that's, and look what's happened. I mean, in our own country, I mean, I'm very pro South. I'm not racist, but I'm very pro South. And I'll make this profound statement right now is that if American black folks knew what I knew about the Civil War, they too would have fought for the South and worked to reform it afterwards. Because when you see what happened during the Civil War, most people don't know this too, but here at Lincoln, long story short, okay, former slaves, you've got your freedom. Now get out. He wanted to, they use the term colonize. He wanted to evict the former slaves to Central America, to Haiti, and or back to Africa. But most people don't know that.
I didn't know that. I thought he was just a vampire killer.
Sure, yeah. And now Bob Marley's song, Buffalo Soldier. Have you heard, that song?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you know the origins of that song?
I thought the Buffalo Soldier was about the black fighters.
the black soldiers in the Union Army after the Civil War, they were referred to Buffalo Soldiers because the Indians thought their hair reminded them of the hair on the back of the buffalo, back of the buffalo's neck. So that's where that term comes from. But the sad part is that Lincoln's generals were the architects of the genocide of the American Indian. In fact, Sherman was one of the guys who coined the phrase, a dead Indian is a good Indian. A good Indian is a dead Indian. So not only were Lincoln's generals the architects of the genocide of the American Indian, but they used black troops to do it. See, that's the sad part of the whole thing. Meanwhile, Great Britain, France, Spain, Holland, I believe Denmark, all those countries got rid of slavery without a civil war. And when the Union came into the South, I mean, they destroyed hospitals, they destroyed libraries. I mean, they destroyed a lot. There's this whole scorched earth thing. So that, you know, they made it even worse. And of course, they raped a lot of slave gals. And so it was mainly fought over the high tariffs, because the South didn't want to pay high tariffs on imported goods, where the revenue mostly went to maintain the northern infrastructure. And a lot of northern states like Illinois and whatnot, they had black codes. They didn't want freed slaves living in the North. Meanwhile, during the Civil War, there was never any massive, that I know of, any massive slave riots or slave rebellions. And after the Civil, even up to that point, American black folks voluntarily accepted Christianity as their religion. So when you really pry back into Civil War, yes, there was a lot of injustices. I'll be the first to say that. But when you look past all that too, and you see what else went on, you think, damn, you know, what a bunch of hypocrites.
Now, I wasn't aware of any of that.
I wasn't either till I started reading this. And when you look at Lincoln's speeches, his speeches before the Civil War, in fact, before he was elected, he was willing to accept slavery as long as the South did not secede. And Fort Sumter also happened to be a federal tax collecting agency where that Fort Sumter was. So things are not like, you know, we'd like them to believe. And of course, we have our fairy tale grade school textbooks. Well, you know, the winners, history is always written by the winner. And, you know, so what I've learned is that things ain't what they seem like on the surface. And when you go behind it, that's why I say, thank goodness for revisionist history, especially objective, intellectual, scholarly revisionism. Because the best friend of truth is time. And you might have heard this saying, that truth passes through three stages: ridicule, opposition, self-evident. You're probably familiar with that. So listen, I'm glad that I got to wind this down, Charles. Thank you for coming on the show. It was great talking with you. I hope that...
thank you, PK.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I hope that I shed some light on a few things and made you take another step back and look at things and say, wow, you know, especially being a veteran. I like talking to vets, because the similar things I've spoken with you about just now, I've had conversations with many other vets, and you know what? They never get mad at me, they never curse me, and they never call me unpatriotic.
No, I don't see how we ever could.
Well, because I touch on a lot of topics that, hey, you know, that might step on some toes. But if we're going to search for the truth, we can't let that get in our way. And as I said up front, you know where my patriotism lies and where my heart lies. So, and with that, I'm going to wind this down. Our show will be on tonight on BBSRadio.com Station 2. I'm here every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. And with that, good night, everyone. Thanks again, Charles.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.